Hello and welcome to Cat the Baker. I'm Chef KB. I don't even know where to begin. So much has happened, like real things, as far as working on my own business. Guess what? I started my own fictitious business name. So it sounds like, well, is it real? Because it's got fictitious in the title. Yes, it is. So I don't know why they do that, but I guess it's not official. So what happens is I have to go to this like civic center and I file my business name, I pay, and then what I have to do is I post my fictitious business name in the newspaper. And it can be any newspaper in the area, and they have to publish it for 4 weeks. And if anybody in that time says, oh, this is the same business name that I have, then I can't use that business name. So that's why it's fictitious until it's official after the 4 weeks. You know, so anybody who has an issue can say something in that time. But officially in the system, there is no other name with that business name. So my business name is Sweet Cat. And if you're interested in following on Instagram, it's at Sweet Cat Pastries. And basically, I've been visiting farmers markets in the area to speak to the manager there to kind of get a feel of what I need to do. Do I need to file an application? Is there a waiting list? You know, and just see everything. Like talk to the vendors that are there and kind of just get more information. Because this has been something I've wanted to do for a really long time. Not farmers markets, but just my own thing. You know, here I am talking about like stupid chef things. I'm not saying they're stupid, but what I mean is all these interactions with these silly chefs, you know, all these silly egos. And I've had it. I've had enough. This is me saying I've had enough. I've had enough for a while, but now I need to actually do something about it. And that's where my troubles have come in, right? So posting my business name, like going to the Civic Center, has been a mixed bag kind of thing as far as my feelings go. Because it's something I wanted to do for so long and I've just talked about it and talked about it. And I hate that. I hate talking about it and not putting things into motion. Like, I'm a doer and I figure things out. You know, I just figure it out. Except for this. This is the one thing that I haven't figured out. And what it is this like fear. It's this crazy fear. You know, money gives you independence. And I've worked for somebody my whole career. You know, the only kind of independent contractor stuff I've done really has been acting, because when you get an acting job, it's for this one client and then they pay you, and then the next acting job is another client, you know. So that's like the most, I guess, non-job I've had, you know. But even as I was auditioning and getting acting jobs, I would still work as a server. I was still getting some flow of money. The thing about now is I'm trying to figure out my routine. I'm trying to figure out just everything. And it's been so challenging because day by day, I'm still spending money. You know, living equals spending money. I'm used to doing the things I want to do. You know, I'm not saying I'm going crazy, but when I need something, like I just ordered business cards. And with the business cards, I ordered a t-shirt with my logo on it. I ordered a baseball cap. You know, if I need something, I'm going to get it. Except for when they're huge purchases, then I kind of freak out a little bit. So like this one license I have to get, it's, what do they call it? It's like a temporary food permit. And what it means is farmers markets, they're not permanent stores. First of all, I've been having these issues recording because now where I live, there are a lot of gardens everywhere in the subdivision, in the apartment subdivision, and they're always leaf blowing, they're always making noises, they're always trimming trees, and I don't have my own like voice booth. Okay, that's another thing, right? I need another thing. So every time I think I can record, it's like, oh no, I can't, you know. Or like now I'm living with my husband and we're doing things together, which I want to do. Like, I want to do these things, but I just have less and less time to record. And I'm not complaining. You know, my life is just different. And I'm trying to figure out my routine. And right now, it's kind of all over the place. So, and I don't know if you can hear this leaf blower in the background. I hope not. But, you know, I'm trying to, I got this like voice dimmer. It's like this padded wall. And I talk in front of that to have like a less echo. So back to this TFF permit, you have to get it for farmers markets because I don't have my own physical shop. And it's a permit that basically says I prep my food at a commercial kitchen and I have all the food safety certificates and things like that. And I follow everything with food safety in mind, you know, and I've done all the right steps. But this permit, so there's two kinds. One is I'm serving everything packaged, and then that's cheaper. That's like $340 for a year. And then the other one is I serve everything open. Like I'm cooking stuff on site. I'm serving it on a plate or whatever. Like it's not packaged. And that is $660. You know, and that's like, that's not a small amount of money. And then I was speaking to Rodolfo about it, and he's like, well, it's worth it to get the $660 permit versus the packaged. You know, and also with the packaged one, you cannot sample. And sampling is a big deal because that's what's going to help increase your sales. If people don't know what it is that you're selling, you know, this sampling is really going to help. And I've been to a few farmers markets now, and I see how important it is, and I'm getting the vibes and talking to the vendors, and it's been really interesting. So I went to the Civic Center, like I said, and I got my fictitious business name, and that was my first step, and that was a couple weeks ago. And after that, I felt like, oh my God, like I'm doing this. I'm really doing it. And it was this positive feeling, you know? And then moments later, I swear, I was like, oh shit, I'm doing it. Like it was like this, like almost like manic kind of feeling. And I'm not that kind of a person. Like I don't really have these moments like that, but I totally did because it's this fear. I'm just so scared. And I think a lot of it has to do with, like, I've always kind of been on the edge of survival. Like, I know that sounds drastic. You know, I've never been homeless. I've always kind of made it through. And if I didn't have the money, like when I left to get divorced, I stayed with my mom, you know, and that was like last resort kind of emergency for me. And it's not like that was my goal, you know, it's just like life happened. But now it's like working in restaurants, working as a pastry chef, I've never made a big amount of money. The most I made was now, like in Aspen, you know, when I worked as a pastry chef there. And only because my rent was lower, you know, not because Aspen is cheaper, not by any means, but it's because I worked at the hotel, I got a special rate, you know, and I was paid quite well. I mean, the most I've ever been paid. So I was able to save, but also just live my life and travel and, you know, and put my money to good use, I guess. And do the things that I want to do. And I felt very independent. At the same time, I didn't have a lot of time. You know, the only time I had to travel was during the off season. But then during the season, you're just constantly working, you know, and that caused me like other issues as far as physical pain and just being sad that I don't actually have a life, you know? And when I did travel, I would travel by myself. And if you've been listening, like, you know, and I just felt very lonely. It was like this very isolated life. And as much as I enjoyed doing things by myself, I'd rather do them with somebody, you know? And now I can. Now I'm married, I'm living with my husband, and it's so nice. Like, even just to watch TV, it's like this new experience, you know, and we're laughing, we're joking, and I love it. Like, I'm so happy. But when I filed for this license, it's just been like a lot of back and forth. Like, one day I'm excited, the next day I'm like on the verge of tears and crying because I'm like, how do I figure this out? How do I do it? You know, it's just me. How do I figure all this out? You know, and Rodolfo's there for me, and he's like my number one cheerleader. And he's like, I believe in you. He's like, do you believe in yourself? And I guess that's the question, right? Like, I know my skills. So I'm trying to get a part-time job. And that's actually been really hard. Based on my experience, most of my career, I've been a pastry chef. And now I'm kind of going back to a pastry cook, only because I want to make money part of the week and just have this consistent money and a job. And the rest of it, you know, I want to teach, and I also want to do my farmer's market and do more of that, do more of my own thing. I'm having trouble just like saying, okay, I'm not going to have a job at all and just go for this farmer's market 100%. You know, that to me gives me like heart palpitations. Like it's too overwhelming for my brain. I can't handle that because I have to just spend all this money, all this equipment, all this branding stuff, all these ingredients. You know, I have to spend a lot before I make money. And yeah, that's the trouble of a small business, right? Like, I guess I could go to a bank. I don't even know. I haven't even gone down that road because I have to do this slowly just for my brain. Just so it's not overwhelming, because this is overwhelming me very easily. And I've been avoiding it for so long. Like, I've wanted to do this, but also I haven't wanted to do this, you know? Like, now I feel like I have no excuses. And I feel like I've had excuses for so long, you know? And it's not like I'm looking for excuses, but at the same time, this is a scary path. This is a new thing for me. And it's safe for me to work for somebody. You know, I can do that. No problem. I have no problem with that. I've been a pastry chef for a while. So these hotels, they're looking for pastry chefs. Even these bakeries, they want to hire me. But I said, I can't work full time. And they only want full time. And that's how it is. If they pay you salary, you're working like 50 to 60 hours. And that's the same life that I had before. I don't want that. You know, I want this new thing as much as it scares me. You know, it's like this double-edged sword or something. I just have to get beyond it. I have to move beyond it so that I don't have this fear. You know, I have to have my first farmer's market and just do it so that I know how to do it, that I'm not scared. I've just really realized how that's been my challenge. At the same time, I want a part-time job. So last week, I went to a hotel, Fairmont Hotel, which is a beautiful hotel. I stayed at a Fairmont when I went to my friend's wedding in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And the Fairmont was beautiful. It's this 5-star hotel. The service was amazing. I loved it. Like, it was just this open-air hotel in the entryway. You're like outside, but not. And you see these palm trees, the breeze is going through, it's sunny. And it was a beautiful hotel. Like, I stayed in this room. It was just like a 2-floor building, and they had all these like little kind of houses, you know, and that was the hotel. And then you could get to the beach with a bike. Like, everywhere were these personal bikes, and you could just ride to the bike and you were at the beach, and it was this amazing experience. So that was my Fairmont experience. So when I saw they were looking for a pastry cook, I was like, okay, yes, let me apply. And then I was very honest with the pastry chef, and I said, you know, I need a flexible schedule because I'm teaching. Like, I want to do a farmer's market. And he seemed very open to that. I've been having trouble finding something part-time because everyone just wants full-time. And I never thought that would be an issue. That didn't work out because last week I also had an interview at a bakery. It was a super cute bakery. I loved the vibes, like casual setting. And the owner, she was in the industry for a long time working like me. And she opened her own thing. And now she had a child like a couple years ago, a baby. And she wants more family time, so she was looking for someone who could kind of be her right hand and cover her, you know, when she can't. which I totally get, you know, but I'm in the same boat. Like, I want a different life. I don't want to just be like gray hair and working full time, you know, like nobody's business. Like, what the hell? Like, I'm not saying that farmers market's going to make me work less. It's just different, you know, and it's for me, it's my thing. And that's what makes the whole thing so different. I don't have to deal with these crazy egos and crazy chefs. And I'm not saying I'm not going to have these egos anywhere, you know, because then it switches, right? Like, then I'm going to be looking for employees with their own issues and whatever that entails. And I'm sure I'm still going to deal with other chefs at the farmers markets and who knows what, you know? I mean, I'll figure it out when it happens and then I'll talk about it. But it's just been this roller coaster. So I went to the Fairmont and the pastry chef seemed very open to being flexible with me, even though it's another hotel. But I thought, okay, if he's open to it and knows, like, I want to be truthful. I don't want him to hire me. And then I say, oh, by the way, I can't on this day because I have to teach. I can't on that day, you know, because I'm doing a farmer's market. So I was very open to begin with. I like to be honest and transparent. That didn't help with me getting a job. So he was the first chef that was open to it. He asked me to come back to do a stage. And that's usually the next step. Like, either if you're a chef, you do a tasting, you know, and it consists of maybe like two plated desserts, one full cake, one banquet dessert, like kind of like that. Or if they ask you to do a stage, you come in and they watch you as you prep items that they need prepped. So I went in, I unmolded some brioche, which they serve these little cute brioche rolls with one of their restaurants. So they have four restaurants on site. And the Fairmont here is in Del Mar, which is about 30 minutes away. And they have this beautiful golf course attached. I mean, it's very fancy. It's 5 stars. Then they asked me, like, they had this wedding tasting the next day. So they asked me to prep for that. So I made this yogurt cremeux. I made a strawberry gel using agar, which is seaweed. And which sounds weird, but it's actually very good. It's just like a lot of strawberry. You know, the agar is a thickener. So instead of using gelatin, which is typically used in a mousse, I use agar, which is a different consistency, but it's good for gels. It's good for like fruit-based things. And then I made I made something else. Oh, a mango mousse. So it was funny because, you know, I've been a chef for a while and I don't stop working in the kitchen. You know, I might have 6 assistants, but I'm still gonna do some tasks, you know, because otherwise I find it to be boring. Like, I don't want to just sit in the office and do all this, you know, boring stuff, which I probably could have done more of. But because it's so boring to me, I avoided it. You know, I probably could have organized my recipe binder in Aspen, which I didn't do. Stuff like that. But instead of doing that, I would work in the kitchen. And also, I like to be in the kitchen with the assistants and see how they work. And also, I always found it useful to be there because, you know, sometimes if you leave the kitchen a bit too long, then the assistants, they kind of dilly-dally or do their own thing, don't focus on what needs to be done. And sometimes they just have questions, you know? So I always wanted to kind of be there and be involved and see what they needed and help if necessary. So the chef asked me to make this mango mousse and it had a few steps. One of them is I had to make an Italian meringue, you know, so I was being tested to see if I can make this mousse and use the techniques in the right way so that it doesn't have lumps, that it doesn't set too fast, you know, and I can pipe it consistently in the molds needed to do like 100 of these, like 100 molds, fill 100 molds. So I had to make an Italian meringue, which is first, you heat your sugar with your water, you heat it to like 240, 238 Fahrenheit, around there, or 212 Celsius. And he uses Celsius and grams, which is normal, you know, but some places use both. And I was more used to using Fahrenheit, the American way, you know, so I'm like, oh, it's Celsius, you know, like Anyway, it was just different. So I made the Italian meringue. Like when you heat your sugar, you pour it into your KitchenAid filled with some whites, right, that are foamy. And then you mix it until it's like a nice thick meringue. On the side, you heat some of your mango puree and you add some gelatin, maybe some more sugar if needed. And then you get that warm and you need to heat it up so that you can put your gelatin into it so that it dissolves. So then you strain that, you add the other half of your cold mango puree, and now it's gonna start to set. So you have to work very quickly, okay? So in another KitchenAid, I mix the whipped cream, very soft peak, because if you overmix whipped cream, it curdles and it does not look pretty. You know, and if, let's say, your mango mousse still has a little bit of warmth, it can curdle very easily. You know, so there's all these steps that you don't think about. But when you have somebody that's just starting, these are all things to consider. And it's a bit more tricky. You know, obviously, I know what I need to do. Like when I see this, I'm like, oh, yeah, just do that and that and that. Like, it's not hard, you know, even though this is a new setting. Right. So I had to figure out where everything was. And I think I did it pretty fast, you know, considering it's a new kitchen. So he was watching me as I was doing it and I put it all together quickly. He seemed happy with it. He tasted it and he's like, OK, good. And he was talking to me as I was doing stuff about my previous jobs, which is funny because he's been in the industry, this pastry chef, he's been in the industry for 22 years. I've been it for 15. He's stayed in the California area this whole time, whereas I've left, you know, but he knew my previous pastry chefs when I worked in LA. And that's the thing. If you stick with something for a long time, it's a small industry. Same with any industry. And especially if you don't move, if you stay in that area and you don't move, everybody really starts to get to know you. So now here I am, you know, and I did a good job and he wants to hire me. And then I went to HR and they said I have to go to an orientation, which isn't till a week and a half. And I'm like, crap, you know, like now I have to wait another week and a half. And for me at this point, it's just like I just need to make money because everything I'm doing is spending. So anyway, today I have the final interview. I have to go in again so that I guess I fill out paperwork. But yesterday, I had an interview with a different chef and I'm thinking, okay, whatever, I'll just do the interview. You know, I already have this job. I mean, I don't have it yet, but it's looking good, right? He called me, I had an interview with him and he was very like peppy and happy. And I'm like, this is not a normal chef. Like what's going on? Why is he so happy? You know, and, but he had this really positive attitude, which I really liked. I've never really had that from a chef, not like this, you know, and he's like, can I see some of your work? And he saw my resume, he was impressed, and his parents opened a German bakery growing up. So he knew a lot of the German pastries. And we had a really good interview and it was much better than I thought it would be, you know, so I sent him my Google Gallery, which is just basically my whole career of works and plated desserts and wedding cakes and chocolate sculptures and everything's in there of everything I've done. It's like over, I don't know, 140 pictures, you know, of like good things. And he responded back with bravo, you know, and so I'm actually seeing him today. I'm driving there in the next 30 minutes. And I guess my thing is, if he's open to my schedule, if he's open to it being flexible, then, you know, I'll do it. Because obviously I won't be making what I was making in Aspen. Like now I'm kind of going backwards as far as being a pastry cook. It's not a lot of money. And I found that in California, they pay even less. Like everything costs more. Gas is like $4.80 a gallon minimum. They pay you like $23, you know, and I guess that's good because some places pay you $19. You know, and they're asking for like a year experience minimum. I mean, this is like starting out from the beginning. Here I am, I've done 15 years, I've worked my way up to pastry chef, and now here I am being a pastry cook again. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is fine, it's just temporary, I just need something. you know, to have a routine, to just feel better about having like a job and making some money, even if it's not this big amount. Okay, fine. You know, I had these other expectations when I came here. And if things fall into my lap, like if I were to get a job doing voiceover and making thousands for one job, great. Absolutely great. But that hasn't happened yet. You know, it's like the stuff that you want it to happen doesn't usually happen. And I'm not trying to be negative here, you know, but I just have to be prepared for, I don't know, things to not happen. Okay. And is that putting negative things out there? I don't know. I just need to be practical, right? I can't wait for this one voiceover job. I mean, I've mailed stuff out to agents. I've gone to some auditions for voice jobs for radio ads. I've sent stuff to radios. Like, I'm trying, you know? And I think I've only been here a month and a half. Like, this stuff is slow. And if I get an audition, I'm going to do it. Like, I just got one yesterday for, like, this Barbie ad. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do it. So if I book that, great, you know? But I still need, like, a day-to-day thing. At the same time, I'm working on this podcast, which doesn't pay me. And next to that, I'm working on this farmer's market, you know, fingers crossed. Like, so I figured out my menu. Okay, as I'm going to farmer's market, I see there's a lot of different countries, like foods of countries. Like originally, like I'm passionate about donuts and I want to make my crullers, right? Like in German, it's called Spritzkringle. They're typically known as French crullers, but they're not really necessarily a French thing. They're big in Germany, and there they're called Spritzkringle. So I'm just going to call them crullers, right? So I want to make those, and I wanted to sell cookies, because everybody loves cookies. When I went to New York a month ago, I saw like all these cookie shops, and everybody is standing in lines for cookies. I mean, believe it or not, it's the most simple thing, and that's what people want. Right? Cookies, brownies, and donuts. That's a huge thing. But when I went to the farmer's market, and it was a really nice farmer's market, it was set in a mall setting. So it's an outdoor mall. And then in the middle of it, you've got all these stands for the farmer's market. And as I'm walking through, I'm seeing there's a Brazilian food stand, which of course I had to bring some things back for Rodolfo, you know, and a big thing they have is pão de queijo. And I know I'm butchering that, but it's a cheese bread and it's made with a glutinous like flour, like a rice flour. So it has a texture and it typically is a bit like heavier. It's just a different texture. Like if you know Asian pastries, they typically use glutinous rice flour. So it's a bit more like springy in your mouth. It's good. It's just different. And then the Brazilian stand, they also do coxinha, which are these tiny, they're like mini domes. And they're made with like a mashed potato. And they have a filling. Usually it's like beef or chicken. And they're breaded. And then they're deep fried. And they're delicious, you know, but they're also quite heavy. I've noticed that there's no light Brazilian food. Or I haven't found it yet, you know. I'm open to it. I just can't eat it all the time. Like, it's not an all-the-time food. So they had this Brazilian stand. They had an Argentinian stand. They had an Indian stand, which was different because they had filled samosas, but not your typical samosa. It was like a buttered chicken-filled samosa, and they were huge. And then they topped it with these sauce, and I had one. Like, they topped it with these sauces. I ordered one, but by the time I got to eat it, it was a bit soggy. I should have put the sauces on the side, you know, but it was very good. But that's the thing. I had all these mixed foods and then I didn't feel so great. I have to like watch that. And then they had like French pastries. They had multiple donuts. Like one was filled donuts. And I got super excited when I saw this. I'm like, oh my God, they're beautiful. First of all, they're beautiful. So I ordered one and it was like a donut rolled in sugar. And it was filled with this cream. It looked like whipped cream and like a strawberry jam inside with a half strawberry as a decoration in the front. So I bought that. It was $8. I'm like, okay, sure, that's like a good price, you know, for this. And then I get home, I try it, and I was so disappointed. Like, the donut itself was good, but guess what they used? They did not use real whipped cream. And I get it, because it's sitting outside. You know, it's at the farmer's market, it's sitting outside, but then don't serve it. Like, guess what they use instead of whipped cream? Fucking Cool Whip. They put on Cool Whip. And you're like, oh, maybe that's not so bad. You know, yes, it is. It's fake. It's fake. You cannot charge $8 for something fake. Okay? Or not to me, not to a pastry chef. Okay? Like, don't serve that. So I got like super snobby and was like, ugh, I'm so disappointed. Because it looked beautiful. Like, I wanted it to be, like, to taste as beautiful as it looked, and it didn't. And then I was like, oh, no, no. So, okay, that's that. I got, like, quite a few things because I got excited. They were good food stands, you know, and I spoke to the manager, and he said, you don't have to fill out an application. He gave me his phone number. He said, you just need to have this temporary food license, you know, and I need to pay. And basically, that takes a month to get. And I was thinking, like, do I want prepackaged foods? Like, not really, because the donuts I want to make, I don't want them to get soggy. But then I need my own fryer on site. I need other things on site. And then I'm going to need a helper, you know? And I was talking to the school instructor of where I teach, and he's super generous, really lovely man. And he is just wanting to help the community, you know, and other chefs and students. And, you know, he's letting me use his kitchen commercially, which is a big deal. You know, I don't have to pay. Obviously, I pay for my ingredients, but it's very generous of him to offer. And he did farmers markets in the past, and he was saying how he did have a helper, but then he went out to walk and see the other stands. And in that time, a homeless man stole his money case, and he ran away with it, you know, and he ran after him, but the money case opened and the homeless man just took all the cash and kept running. You know, he said, so I have to have a helper, even though now everything's digital, you know, and these farmers stands are very close together, so I don't think a homeless man can just run in there. But what do I know? I mean, everybody's experienced different things, you know, and I'm open to advice. So I was speaking to the farmer's market manager, and he was saying, you know, what do you want to serve? And I said, you know, these crullers, they're basically German donuts. And he's like, okay, well, bring me a sample, get this permit, and then you can stop by. You know, I'm like, oh, okay, like, that was cool, you know? And then I was talking to Rodolfo about the kinds of stands that I saw. He said, you should just do like a German theme. And I thought about it, and I thought, yes, like, why not? You know, people don't really know German pastries. People know French pastries like nobody's business, right? Like, what's so freaking good about French? Come on. okay, they have amazing pastries. But still, so do the Japanese, so do the Germans. You know, there's a lot of good stuff out there, and most people don't know about German pastries, right? So these crullers, they're actually huge in Germany, so I'm going to use those. I want to make pretzel bread. My pretzel bread is delicious and amazing, and it's fresh. And I was thinking, like, I don't want to do savory food. Like, that's what most people know for German food, right? Is like the Bratwurst, the Wiener, like all these sausages and whatnot. You know, I don't want to go into that direction yet. You know, I'm not saying I can't, but I'm a pastry chef. Like, that's my passion. I want to start with that, you know, all the sweet stuff. So yeah, I was thinking about making pretzel bread the way I've made it so many times, and then serve it with like this German mustard, and then have some like other kind of German style cakes, maybe streusel bars. Why not have a cookie, right? Like, why can I not have a cookie? So in Germany and Switzerland, they serve brownies and cookies, and they advertise it like in bakeries, and they advertise it as American brownie, American cookie, you know? So they're making these in Europe because it's huge in the US, and they're very popular there too, even though they're a lot sweeter than their other desserts. And it's funny, too, there the brownies are more cakey, they're less fudgy, because they use less sugar. What makes a brownie super fudgy is the high amount of sugar, you know? It's like super bad for you. But in Europe, they use a lot less sugar, and it tastes different. So why can't I serve a brownie? And I was thinking about making it gluten-free, because that's all the rage. You know, just because I have German-themed food doesn't mean I can't also add some other things that sell well. Because in the end, it's a business. In the end, I'm trying to make money. And if I can make these pastries that are maybe more delicious than the other stands in the market, why not? You know, because as I was walking through, I saw Asian donuts, I saw mini donuts, I saw these filled donuts. So there's a lot of donuts. So what makes my donut different, you know? First of all, it's a pâte à choux dough, which means, and it's not bless you, don't say bless you. So pâte à choux means cabbage paste in French. It's a profiterole dough. If you've ever had an éclair, if you've ever had a profiterole, it's the same dough as that. It takes a lot of butter, a lot of eggs. It's high calorie and it's quite expensive. You know, so this is an expensive donut. It's not your average yeasted donut. This actually has no yeast in it. It's purely rising on the amount of eggs in there. And it's delicious, you know. And when I worked in Flagstaff at the cafe, this was the number one selling thing that I started. I just want to say, all right. They're still doing it. I haven't visited since. But if you've ever gone to this cafe in Flagstaff when I was there, okay, you know how good they tasted. So if you come to my farmer's market in San Diego, when I start serving them, when I'm open, you tell me and I'll give you an extra pastry, because that means you've been a good follower to me, which I appreciate. So this profiterole dough, it's delicious. And normally you bake pâte à choux, you know, which is the éclair, the profiterole, the cream puff. You bake it, and it's called cabbage paste because of how it expands. It has like a cabbage-like texture on the outside, you know, and it just expands. It gets huge. And then on the inside, it becomes hollow, and you can fill it if you want to. And it's just like this delicious dough. But the difference is these crullers, same dough, but deep fried, which makes it even better. Hello, like anything you deep fry, you know. So these cannot be gluten-free because gluten-free just reacts differently. The flour acts differently. But I do want to do some gluten-free cookies, gluten-free brownie, and then my pretzels, you know. So I have a couple German items and then a couple American German items, because I'm German. Hello, like, I'm still making the items, you know. So that was my plan. I thought, why not? You know, I'm going to go with a German theme because I'm German and that's what I'm going to do. And then I went to the farmer's market yesterday in Santee, which is in the San Diego area, but it's a little out of the way. Like, it's not out of the way, but it's about 25 minutes away from like downtown San Diego. And I live about 14 minutes outside. So this is like another 12-14 minute drive. So I went there yesterday. Some of the same people that I saw from the previous markets, if you go the farmer's market route, you can just do that all week. You know, that's your job. I mean, once you have the equipment, once you have the licensing, I mean, you might as well make the most of it, right? And the manager at this other one I went to, he was saying that, and I don't know which food he's selling, you know, but he was saying that one person was making $4,000 in 4 hours just on his food. I mean, that's amazing, you know. And he was saying another one made $7,000 in 4 hours. And I don't know if this is a consistent thing, but wow. And then the manager of the farmer's market takes 10%, you know. So if you're making $4,000, you give the manager $400. I think he said if you make under $1,000, he takes $60. Is that right? I can't be right. Because then he won 100. I don't know. He said some amount, like minimum he takes is 60. And then it just goes up from there. So he wants people to sell a lot, right? So he makes the most money. And then the one I went to yesterday in Santee, like I said, there's some of the same vendors. I had these amazing fresh mulberries there. I don't know if you've ever had mulberries, but I've never seen them like this. They are long. They look like extra long, skinny blackberries, but they were so, so, so sweet. And they were delicious. I've never seen that before. And then I got some fresh honey. Like, what else are you going to do, right? You got to get fresh honey at a farmer's market. I mean, that's a given. You know, so I went there to check out, okay, what if I were to open there at this farmer's market? And he was telling me his rules. You know, each farmer's market has a different vibe, right? Like a different kind of setting. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm kind of researching, going around, you know, and of course, when I'm at these farmer's markets, I buy, right? Because I want to taste. So there were these French pastries, ham and cheese croissant. There was an almond croissant, which was good, but the filling, I think, could have been better, like more almonds. You know, like you see where people skimp. And that's my thing. Like, I want to do fresh stuff and I don't want to skimp, but then that's going to take more money. You know, so will somebody buy my stuff if one donut is $5-6, you know, if it's a good size? You know, I don't know, but I'm going to have to start testing and giving out samples and we'll see. But last week, Rodolfo and I actually drove up to Sequoia National Park. The last time I was there was in 1992, right? Like, that's the first time I went to the U.S. with my family. We flew to L.A. from London and we rented a motorhome. And we drove up California to Lake Tahoe, to Yosemite, to Sequoia National Park. We drove down to Las Vegas. From Las Vegas, we flew to the Grand Canyon. Anyway, like, all these memories were coming back. And I hadn't been to Sequoia National Park since 1992. And Rodolfo had always wanted to go. So what's amazing about Sequoia National Park is giant, giant trees. You know, and you're like, okay, cool. Like, no, it's not just cool. It's amazing. And it's hard to even picture in a photograph because they're so huge. So like the diameter of one of these trees is 11 feet minimum, you know, and they keep growing. They keep growing. So when a sequoia tree dies, like some of these trees, the oldest sequoia tree is 4,700 years old. Think about that. 4,700 years, okay? I mean, yes, if you look at the Grand Canyon, that's millions of years. I mean, I can't even fathom that, right? But even these trees, they're a different species of tree. They're so spectacular, 4,700 years old, and they average at least 3,000 years. So think about a human lifespan, right? Like, we're thinking, oh, 80 years is a good age for a human being. 80 years is nothing for this tree. Like, I was thinking, I was there in 1992, okay? That's, what, 30 years ago? I mean, that is nothing for these trees. It's almost like unaltered. The only thing that's changed is there have been forest fires since, you know, in these 30 years. So it was interesting because if you look at, so one tree was cut open because it fell. So they cut it and you could see the lines inside the tree, which means the age of the tree. But when the lines were thicker, like more space in the line, it showed that there was a forest fire. And this one tree that was 4,700 years old had lived through 80 fires. I mean, it just blows my mind to think about 4,700 years for one tree. You know, and they're so big. If you're standing in front of it, you can't even, like, fathom what's standing in front of you. I know this sounds crazy, like, the way I'm explaining it, but if you ever get the chance, please go see these trees. They're beautiful. They're more burn resistant because the bark is different and they're actually harder to burn, which is great. Like, that's great news. You know, usually when something is this amazing, it like becomes extinct faster, you know, but it's harder to burn because of the bark. The bark is different and it's just very resilient. It's not prone to getting bugs like other trees. But if you look at a normal tree, and then go to the sequoia. The normal tree that's big looks tiny in comparison, you know. So we went there with a van. We got a new van for his business. It's like a Transit Ford 250. The other one was about to break down and was getting kind of dangerous. So we got a new van and he suggested, why don't we go camping? And we did. So we went to Sequoia National Park. I made reservations and we almost didn't. We almost just went. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to look into this. And you have to make reservations at national parks. And it was really hard to get. Like, I had to get one reservation at one campsite, and then it was booked. I had to get another reservation at a different campsite, and then it was fully booked. You know, we went 3 nights total, one at the Lodgepole campsite, which was right next to a river, another one at a campsite like 20 minutes away. After that, we left Sequoia. You know, we went on these like trails. It was just really nice. It was just nice to be somewhere else, like a different scenery. You know, of course, I'm always into traveling and seeing new things. It brought back all these memories, you know, from my family and having been there. And when we did campfires, and we did these marshmallows, you know, and it just brought back like good memories of my mom and my family. And then the last night, we drove 3 hours just outside of LA. It was by this lake called Pyramid Lake. It's a reservoir. And I kayaked there. And that day was so windy. Like, Rodolfo wanted to fish, so he went fishing. And this lake is huge. It has a lot of different pockets. And within the pockets, there's less wind. So I was kind of out of sight. And he was worried about me because it was so windy. But the main lake was too crazy. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go into these pockets. But he couldn't see me, so he thought something happened. So he almost went to the sheriff, you know, to ask to look for me. But then he asked this one boat that came back and asked them if they had seen me. And they said yes, that I was going inside these pockets because it was less windy. So then I made it back, like I kayaked back against the wind, and it was so hard. It was like more of a workout than I was imagining, especially camping, because I don't sleep great at night camping, even though we had a mattress, but it was a blow-up mattress, and the air kept going out. So by the time it was morning, it was like too bouncy, you know, and it's like you get stuck inside the mattress because the air is just deflating. So I didn't sleep great during the camping process. And then I had to kayak against the wind and I'm like, oh my God. So my shoulders were getting a really good workout. I did make it back. At one point, I thought, wasn't sure how I was going to get back because the wind was so strong that it wanted to like push my boat away. And I thought it would kind of flip it at one point. I was wearing my life jacket and thank goodness it didn't flip it. He saw me coming back and then he's like, can you not like go so far, you know? And he was super worried. But then I said, it's fine. Everything's fine, you know? And we drove back to San Diego from there.
I did want to talk about though, what was pretty funny. Before I could even get my kayak into the lake, they did this inspection and they made a big deal out of it. Like, I just have a kayak. Nothing special. It's inflatable. It's not even this set plastic kayak. You know, it's an inflatable kayak. So I had to have it inspected. And it was like some weird Californian bureaucracy. You can't just go into the lake with your inflatable boat or any boat for that matter. All boats have to be inspected. But I'm thinking, okay, any big boat is probably more due for inspection than my inflatable kayak. No. So I had to take it out. The woman who was inspecting it, she wasn't touching it. I had to do like all the work, you know? So she said, fill out this form, and it had to have my information on it. She said, can you roll it open? And I said, sure, like why? And she said, it cannot have any moisture, even a drop of moisture that's in there, and it will fail. And I'm thinking, what the hell? Like, what is this? She's like, when did you use it last? I said, like a month ago, you know, when I went into the lake with Rodolfo using the kayak close to the apartment here. And she said, where was it? You know, so I said, I gave her the information and she put her finger under like the flap of the kayak, you know, it's deflated. And she was feeling if there was any moisture. And I'm like, oh my God, there's got to be moisture. Like, you know, because I don't leave them out to dry. Like when I kayak, I roll it open I leave it open for like a few hours and then I roll it up. So sometimes there's definitely moisture from a previous leak. So I'm thinking, oh my God, like it's bound to fail. She's saying even a drop will make this boat fail. So I guess she didn't feel any moisture. So she's like, okay, you've passed. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so intense. So I was just thinking about that. I'm like, I got to talk about this. And the reason they do this, a couple years ago, they had this algae outbreak and they had to shut down the lake. And this is a reservoir where people drink from, even though they have all these boats on it. Like, it doesn't make sense. Technically, you shouldn't have any boats on there, you know, because people, it's a reservoir. It happened, and then I get on the lake, and it's crazy windy. So, but the lake itself is nice, you know, it's just very desert-like. But they're crazy about who goes on the lake and what other lake you've been on because of this algae. They don't want new bacteria in the lake. So yeah, that's been like my adventure. Okay, so I did this job interview, and it was at the Coronado Hotel, or Hotel del Coronado, which is a vintage hotel. The Kennedys used to vacation there. It's beautiful. It's right on the beach. It's very Victorian. They're remodeling the whole thing. They're spending $1.4 million. Correction. I actually found out it's $600 million. $600 million. Okay, I just said that twice. To keep its vintageness, but add on and just make it look more classy, you know, less old. So I went there, I met with the pastry chef who was very excited. Like, he was just excited. And he showed me all the grounds. There are six restaurants connected to it. There's a whole like sundae ice cream bar, which they don't make the ice cream for, they buy it only because they go through so much, which is understandable. He basically showed me the pastry kitchen, which is in the basement, of course. But it's very organized. I was very impressed by his organization. You know, he organized it to the point that I never really organized things as far as the recipes go. And I don't know, I just wasn't expecting his excitedness, you know? So he gave me like this quiz, how do you make crème anglaise? What does FIFO mean? Which means first in, first out. And he was asking me all these kitchen things, which, you know, obviously I knew. And then he wanted me to meet with the executive chef, but he was in a meeting. So he's like, I'll talk to him and let you know, because he told me he wanted to hire me. But it's a pastry cook position and it's union, which means as pastry cook one, which is, I guess, higher than two or three, I get between $21 and $24. You know, there's not any wiggle room really within that. So I mentioned the other hotel that they were offering more, and he said, let me talk to the executive chef. So I left, and then he messaged me, are you still here? Like 5 minutes later, I had just driven off the grounds, and then I said, shall I come back around? So I came back in to the main entrance. The executive chef and pastry chef both walked out to meet me in the driveway where valet is. And I was speaking to the executive chef, like, outside the hotel. And I noticed he had an accent. His name was Stefan. Does every hotel have a Stefan? You know, I feel like it does. He said he's from Austria, and we started speaking German. He wanted to know, you know, why I wanted this position, because I would qualify for the pastry sous position that's open. But I said, I want to start my own business. I'm also teaching, you know, and I want to do farmers markets. And he's like, okay, I understand. And we were saying all this in German. And I feel like speaking in German with him added something. You know, it was positive that I was speaking German. And I felt like he related to me in a different way, you know, and I feel like that's all I needed. He asked me like three questions. And I said, is it possible to get higher, you know, or 24 or above? And he's like, it is union. He can write a note, an email, basically, to a union member and ask for more, you know, so he's going to try and make that happen, which is huge. And it's only because I mentioned the other hotel, you know, so there is competition and they don't want me to go to the other hotel. But he did say I'm overqualified But at the same time, he'd love to have me on because of my knowledge and skills, you know. And I said, for me, just the most important thing is that I can work and make money, but also be able to teach and have a day where I can do this farmer's market. So they seemed very open to the flexibility, which was nice, you know, but I didn't expect them to really move forward on this so fast. And then when I left, I got a phone call asking me to drive to Vista, which is about 45 minutes north. And that's where I'm going to be teaching the 55-year-old plus class, nutrition and baking class for a community center. So it's a new community center, even though the kitchen isn't new, of course, you know, and then it's basic. They want me to lecture about healthy ingredients and why I use them, and then bake it there, and then everybody tastes it, you know. So it's a very casual 1-hour class. So you have to have simple things, and I have to bring my own ingredients, and then I get paid for it, etc. So I drove up there, and the next thing I knew, the other hotel canceled their final interview with me. So I thought, okay, like, I can't force anything. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But I felt really positive about the meeting at the Coronado Hotel. Okay, I know I'm kind of rambling, because I swear, so much has happened, and now this is real time. This is today. Tomorrow's 4th of July, and I know I'm a day late with this podcast because I've been so busy. Okay, just to catch you up, I did get the job at the Hotel Del Coronado, and it's been going great. I love not being chef right now, because nobody bothers me. Yes, I'm making less money, even though the executive chef did get me more money, which is great, but it's not the level of like what a chef would be making. And the pastry chef mentioned a few times, don't you want to be my sous chef? And I said, no, I don't. Because, you know, now I see how stressful he is all the time and how he's running around getting stressed out. And that was me. That was me, you know, with meetings and ordering and events and BO meetings and just everything you have to do. It's a lot, you know, even though the staff he has is very capable. There's no J1s. Everyone knows what they're doing, and they're there. They're dependable and they're competent, which is also a new thing. With what I know and my skills, I'm happy to just prep, even though it's more physical labor. But I'm happy to just go to my job, leave, and be done with it, you know? And now I'm focusing more on my business and my things. And I got my first order yesterday of 24 crullers, but I made them in my own little deep fryer, and it took an hour and a half because it only fits 4 at one time if they're smaller, 3 if they're bigger. And it took forever, so I got up at 4 a.m. I'm working at this hotel. After a week of working there, he said, can you make this wedding cake? And it was a Victorian wedding cake, 3-tier. It was very large, and who knows how much they paid to have it made, you know, like the couple. But he entrusted me with that. So he's trusting me with very big things, you know, because he sees what I can do, which is nice. You know, I'm happy to do them, and I feel like I'm being a lot more creative and just using my skills. But the executive chef left after just 2 weeks of being there. He gave his notice, the Austrian chef. I was asked to make an Apfelstrudel, an apple strudel, for him with fresh phyllo dough. So we made that at work. And next to that, I got my big license, the $660 license. I'm getting all the equipment. I asked my dad to loan me money, which I will pay him back, just because everything is just adding up, adding up. I went to Restaurant Depot. I got all this equipment, and just like that, another $500. Like, it's crazy. So it's a lot, but it's positive. You know, I'm working. I was supposed to get my paycheck this week, so that's like my first paycheck after being in San Diego. I am teaching, even though, so he offered me a full-time job, the instructor, the owner of the culinary school, because one of the chefs is leaving. So he's saying, can you teach baking full-time and I will teach the culinary class? Even though he said it on my first day at the hotel, and I just got this job at the hotel. I can't just leave that. And it's not like he's paying more, and it's just for a few hours a day. And at the hotel, I get benefits, which is also positive, you know, because it's union. So your benefits are quite cheap, even for an hourly worker. So I said, I just started. Like, you're telling me today I need to work there and see how it goes. And now he's saying, if I'm using the kitchen to bake my things for the farmer's market, he's charging me $32 an hour to use the kitchen. Because I said, I'm not going to take that position now, you know, to teach full time. And honestly, I'm glad I didn't, because I can only make so much money a day, because it's not the whole day. And I really enjoy working at the hotel. It's right on the beach. And during my break, I just go to the beach and smell the sea air. Sometimes after work, I just sit at the beach. I bodyboard. I have my bodyboard in my car, and I'll just take it out and go hit the waves. And I really like it. I like that I can just work, be done with work, do all the prep, do it all right, and then I'm done. That's it, you know? And I'm getting all my stuff for the farmer's market. So, oh, and the job in Vista, the one where I had to drive like an hour just to get there, I quit it. I said, I'm not going to do it just because the drive was too much. And sometimes in traffic, it's like an hour and a half. And that's just one way. And the class is just like 2 hours. So it's not worth it, you know? And then, of course, she was upset. But I thought, okay, it's better to cancel it now than do the class and then cancel if it doesn't fit into my schedule. So anyway, a lot of things have happened. And I'm off tomorrow for 4th of July, which is also rare to be off on a holiday. But I haven't worked there 90 days yet. And because it's union, you get paid time and a half. So I think they just don't want me working. Like, I don't think I can work a full 8-hour shift at time and a half when I haven't been there for 90 days. I think that's a rule. So I'm off, and I'm planning to see the fireworks. So let me leave it here, because I could just talk forever. And some funny things happened at work too, which I'll have to talk about another time. So happy 4th of July for tomorrow. Thank you for listening to Cat the Baker. Until next time, I'm Chef KB.